I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The Financial Times celebrates its 125th anniversary this year, and a wonderful new book celebrates a feature of the paper that's one of its most popular. In Lunch with the FT, 52 Classic Interviews, edited by Lionel Barber, we're treated to a meal with some of the world's remarkable figures. The feature, which has been in the paper weekly since 1994, has a reporter or editor from the Financial Times taking to lunch either a celebrity, power broker, or a politician. What you get is a conversation that provides insight into the person being dined out on the FT's tab, as well as a peek into who they are or whatever is pertinent in the world at the time. You have an eclectic mix of diners in this collection, from Jimmy Carter to George Soros, Prince Al-Waleed to F.W. de Klerk. There are thinkers like Paul Krugman and Martin Amis, to world figures like Angela Merkel and Donald Rumsfeld. There are celebrities, too, like P. Diddy and Angelina Jolie. Joining me now is Neil O'Sullivan. He is the deputy editor of the Life and Arts Review section of the Financial Times. He played a part in putting together of this book. I'll ask him about the book, this feature, and what's illuminated at lunch. The book is published by Portfolio, which is an imprint of Penguin. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program in London, Neil O'Sullivan. Mr. O'Sullivan, good morning.
Good morning.
Fine, thanks. Or good evening, as is the case.
Good evening, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. I really enjoyed this book. Whose idea was it to take this feature, which is quite popular, and put it together in the form of this collection?
Well, I think probably the roots of it came last year when we... I work on the Life and Arts section, and in the course of the year, we were thinking of feature ideas, and we realized that the Lunch for the FT was about to celebrate its 18th birthday. So we came up with the idea to do a story about the kind of evolution of the Lunch with the FT and what it told us, not so much about the feature, but what it told us perhaps about, you know, the way that we dine out and the different ways in which society and celebrity interviews might have changed in the course of those 18 years. And so we asked one of our columnists, Matthew Engel, who's a wonderful writer, to sort of research this for us. And he went back into the archives and he, you know, discovered all sorts of things. We run the feature, and then I think, you know, people really enjoyed the feature, and they sort of realized with the 125th anniversary of the FT coming up this year that there may be an opportunity to do a little bit more around it. And I think it's there that the idea for the book came about initially.
So one of your jobs as the deputy editor of the Life and Arts section is to oversee this feature, is that correct?
Yeah, I, along with the editor, Lucy Tuck, we generally are the people who either we commission the Lunch for the FT feature and we edit it as well, so yes.
Yeah. What do you do in terms of arranging the lunches? Do people come to you and say, like a celebrity or their publicist says so and so is in town? We'd like you to take them to lunch. Does that happen at all?
That happens. Yeah, that happens a bit. It's a mixture, really. That happens a bit, but we like also to sort of proactively commission things, because you don't particularly want to just be limited to the people who have got something to sell at that particular time. So we do approach people, you know, especially people who will be very difficult to get. It can take quite a long time. You put a request in and you keep chasing it, and you hopefully in the end it might come off. There was one that took us a couple of years to get, which we got earlier this year, which was one with Lucien Grange, who's the guy who's in charge of Universal Records, and he was very elusive, but eventually we got him. And, you know, that's great when you can kind of get a mixture of people that they come to you, but also people that you go to them, and it's your idea. And also, lots of our correspondents come up with ideas as well, that they will suggest people that maybe are in the patches that they cover. And so we have quite a range of options or a range of ways that we go about fixing up the lunch for the FT.
And then, so do you also decide on which writer goes with which guest?
Yeah, we do, yeah. I mean, if a writer brings you the idea and you say yes to that idea, then it's an easy choice. But part of the fun for us is to think about, you know, what will matching people up, how do we match, what is the best writer, who is the best writer to match with this particular Lunch with the FT and this particular subject. And, yeah, we do put quite a bit of thought into that, and hopefully, the idea is not only that you're going to choose someone who's knowledgeable about that personal subject, but also someone who has a feature writing sensibility, someone who understands the kind of nature of the lunch with the FT, that it's not just an interview that happens to take place in a restaurant, but it's also a record of an encounter, with this person in this place.
Now, who picks the places to go to?
Well, one of the rules is that the person who we're taking to lunch chooses. So they choose, and if we're lucky, they choose somewhere that means something to them. Earlier this year, we had a lovely lunch with this is a 90-year-old QC called Sidney Kentridge, who was he defended Nelson Mandela at a treason trial in South Africa in the 50s, and he'd arrived in Britain in the 60s, and he'd gone to this place, the Bentley's Oyster Bar in Piccadilly, this kind of grand old place, when we took him to lunch, he chose there, so that immediately lent the piece a nice opportunity to sort of talk about his early years, times that he'd been there before, how British food had changed since he came from South Africa just after the war. So in that way, the choice of venue was great, and it immediately lent something which you wouldn't have had the opportunity to go into had it been just a interview in a room somewhere else. So that was a good one.
One of the things I enjoy about the feature is the tally at the end. What they ordered, how much everything cost. Do you ever limit the expenses?
No. No, we don't. The editor, Lionel Barber, the editor of the FT, he's kind of quite clear that we should be lunching with, I think his phrase is lunch with panache, but not indulgence. But so we don't, but we... So the ideal, I think, is that people do order well and, they don't sort of hold themselves in, but that they don't kind of order the most expensive wine in the whole restaurant. And I think the only time that I can remember really that it's happened was by mistake. And there was a Ukrainian billionaire called Viktor Pinchuk who thought that he was picking up the tab, and he ordered a $300 bottle of Burgundy. So I think he was quite embarrassed when he realised that he wasn't picking up the tab. But that is one of the rules too. The two rules really, that the person chooses the restaurant and the FT picks up the bill.
And it's not always lunch, because sometimes the people don't even eat anything. It's just a tea or something like that. I know there's one in the book where they didn't even have lunch, but there was a flight involved to go talk to them. I guess the guy in Kenya, right, the opposition leader?
The intention there was that there would be dinner with, I think it was Morgan Tsvangirai in Zimbabwe, but things in Zimbabwe obviously can be quite turbulent, and I think things had happened that day which meant that a dinner that was arranged didn't happen, and so it ended up with sundowners, which effectively was just a Diet Coke. But there have been periods, and this is something that I think says something a bit about the way that lunch and the way that people do lunch now, or do lunch, has changed in the last 20 years, because initially there was a sort of feeling that people would go out for long lunches and they would drink. But over the course of the feature and of the last 20 years, it has sort of been apparent that people are less willing to kind of pig out, as we might say, and they're less, they kind of watch what they eat, and they certainly watch what they drink, partly because they're very busy, important people, and they've got other things to do. They can't afford to get wasted in the afternoon and just write the rest of the day off. But, there is some kind of regret on our part, and we're certainly very excited when people do decide to kind of hit the bottle a little bit.
Yeah. Did you find that... people reveal more at lunch than, say, if they were at your editorial room, the boardroom, or say in an office somewhere just chatting?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, there's certainly, if you're taking them out of the situation where it's just person to person, and they're clearly there's nothing else going on except the interview, which they're focused on, then you do increase the sort of chances of, they have to eat as well as you do, and so immediately people's guards have to drop a bit. You know, they have other things to think about, and it just settles into something which they're perhaps a little bit less familiar with. And that's not intended to trap them or catch them out in any way. But it was part of the thinking, I think, that it would just perhaps provide something less scripted. You know, they're not necessarily thinking immediately of their stock answer. You know, they may kind of relax a bit, and they may just kind of say something that they wouldn't have said otherwise.
Now, the illustrations that are in the book, they're done by James Ferguson. They also appear in the paper with the feature, right?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. Does he go to lunch, too?
No, he doesn't. No. He sits in the corner of our office, and we send him the copy, and we ask the people, when they do the lunch, to, if possible, to use their phone or whatever, to just take a little snap of what the person is wearing or what they look like on that day, and he uses that to sort of feed into his research on the internet of what they look like, and he produces through a mixture of combination of that and maybe something that's in the copy that he would like to kind of feature, you know, something that they're eating or drinking. He does it that way. So there was a very good one was last year. There was the Russian newspaper magnate Alexander Lebedev, and the key thing about that lunch was that in the very first sort of couple of lines, it was clear that something on his plate was moving. So there was a scampi that kind of made a dash for the door, and so obviously, you know, that gives the illustrator as well as the writer something great to kind of work with.
How long have you been with the Financial Times?
10 years or so.
Yeah, have you've taken people to lunch yourself?
I haven't actually. No, I mean I do occasionally write, and I have done interviews for the Financial Times, but as I say, partly it's because my job, I'm an editor really, and if we're going to produce the best piece, we have to sort of think who will be the best person to write it, and I'm afraid most of the time I can think of someone who will bring more to the lunch with a certain person than I would, so that's the way it goes, maybe one day.
Yeah, is there someone that you'd like to take to lunch?
I mean, one person who would be great, and I don't know how familiar you are with him, is the football manager for Arsenal Football Club, Arsene Wenger, who's kind of very sort of learned, sophisticated Frenchman, and he knows about football, he knows about economics, and he's just quite a very interesting character. Unfortunately, I don't think he doesn't do interviews, and he doesn't eat very much because he's very thin and sort of austere looking. So I'm not sure whether this one will ever happen, but I think he would be great.
Have there been people that you folks at the FT have approached that have refused outright?
Yeah, plenty of people. I mean, it's not so much that they refuse outright. It's more that they, it's just something that they say, oh, not on this occasion, or no thanks, you know, we're not doing anything at the moment. Often they will kind of invite us to sort of try again in a while, so we do that, but you know, sometimes they prove very elusive. Sometimes just as the lunch is, you know, for a lot of people it might be the reason why they would like to do it, and it's the reason why a lot of people would like to read it. It might also occasionally be a reason why people might not like to do it, you know, because they might not want to kind of sit there and sort of be trying to pick apart their sort of elaborate dish while they're being interviewed. You know, they might find it kind of slightly uncomfortable thing to be doing.
You mentioned that it's its 18th birthday. It started in 94. Whose idea was it to do this? I know in the Globe and Mail here in Canada, we had a columnist take this up for about 6 years, and from the late 90s on. It has been quite an influential sort of feature, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I suppose it came about. It was the weekend FT, distinct from the weekday FT. It's quite a different paper, and I think that it was something that the editor, I think his name is Max Wilkinson, is a little bit before my time, but I think he was under pressure to come up with something a little bit different, and the thing that he came up with was the idea of taking people out to lunch with the FT, and I think, it just kind of, it's amazing, it has become something that's influenced other features, but it's also something that, you know, it's changed as the FT has changed. I think in the beginning, the FT was far less of a global newspaper and more UK-centric, and the lunch reflected that. But as it's gone on, you know, so the sort of range of people that we've done lunch with, they come from all over now, and maybe in the beginning it used to be much more parochial in its outlook. So it's something that's really become, you know, terrible word, but it's become a bit of a brand for the FT. So yeah, it's great to work on anyway.
The Financial Times has had the unique position in that it was one of the first papers to pioneer the paywall. And I'm curious to know how that's worked out, and has it been profitable enough that it's affected the paper's bottom line and perhaps influenced its survival in these times?
Yeah, I think it's sort of generally, you know, it's not particularly something I know loads about, but I think it's certainly true that, or it's felt that that it has been a successful move, because the FT, certainly in its weekday iteration, it does have content which people will pay for. You know, it is essentially business newspaper, and it provides information that people perhaps couldn't get elsewhere. You know, they couldn't get from general newspapers or other places. So it made a lot of sense to charge people for the content, and I think it has worked. I think it's worked well. I think numbers are good. So
if you had
the lunch for the FT is
No, go ahead. Sorry.
The lunch for the FT is not it's part of the weekend FT, which is not behind the paywall, so that you can actually see that without paying for it.
Right. Yeah. Which I do out here in Vancouver.
Yes.
If you had to be taken to lunch, where would you pick?
Oh, well, that's a very good question. I don't honestly know really. The one that sort of stays in my mind is the one where there was the guy that was, I think he was the Georgian president, and he decided to have lunch on a helicopter. So that would be quite exciting, I think. Most of the people, there's a lot of people who choose in London. A lot of people go to Scott's in Mayfair, which is quite a nice, very posh sort of restaurant, fish restaurant, I think. And in New York, often the people we choose head for the Four Seasons. I'm not a great foodie, so I couldn't really say.
I've really enjoyed this book, and I enjoyed the column. I appreciate your time today. Good night, Neil.
Oh, good night. Thank you very much.
The book is called Lunch with EFT, 52 Classic Interviews, edited by Lionel Barber. It's published by Portfolio, which is an imprint of Penguin. Neil O'Sullivan, the deputy editor of the Life and Arts section of the Financial Times, joined me on the line from London, England. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plata.